accession number 26560, Reel 1.
Mr. Thomas Nicol, Reel 1. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Nicol?
Yes, I was born in London, 24th of the 8th, 1932.
And can you tell us a bit about your family background, the part of London you lived in?
Well, in actual fact, I was born in Stratford, in Albert Square. And family background, my father was a butcher in Smithfield Meat Market. My mum was just a housewife, and I had two sisters, both older than me. And we lived up until the war broke out.
In Stratford?
In Stratford.
And what was it like? Was it a comfortable, happy childhood? Or?
Yeah, I think so, really. It was... the square was quite a private place, so we could play out fairly easily, and there were other kids around, you know. But what I remember of it, yeah, it was quite a happy childhood.
Now, what about your education?
Well, I went to, obviously, an infant and a junior school up until about 1939. That's a bit of a guess, but... and then when the war broke out...
Now, how were you doing at school? I mean, did you enjoy school? Were you good at it, or...?
No, I was a bit slow, I think. I suppose I was okay, but... I wasn't up with the top people, you know?
Now, you'd be seven when the war broke out.
Right.
Ish, yes, seven.
Yes, seven, yeah. And there was a sort of a general panic in London... about bombing and whatnot, and my mother and father must have arranged for me to be, along with my sisters, to be evacuated.
Privately, not part of...
No, part of the scene, the system, you know, the scheme. And I'm not sure of the year that was, but it would be 39 or 40.
Now, what do you remember? I mean, you're so young. I mean, what, did the war make an impact on you, the declaration of war and this evacuation?
No.
So what do you remember about the evacuation?
Well, I remember we were sort of parcelled up, labelled, and our parents took us to the train, and we were trained down to Manningtree in Essex, right? We there reported to the local school. Where we were picked over and sorted out, and you'll come with me and your sisters will go south, and we were split up three different places, and we then sort of lived there and went to the local school.
Were you nervous? I mean, it must have been strange being split up.
No, I don't remember as being frightened or I mean, I miss my mum and dad, but apart from that, no, I don't think there was any sort of great fear.
Now, what were the family like you were with? You were on your own with this family?
I was on my own with this family, and they were a Salvation Army family. And what I remember of it, the man was a very kind man. The sisters weren't as kind.
In what way?
Well, they were older, and I suppose I was... hogging their space a bit, I suppose. The eldest girl, she was quite kind, but there was another girl younger than her. I suppose she'd be probably 11 or 12, and she was at times quite sort of spiteful. You know?
In what way? How did she show it, you know?
Resentment. Give me a clip of, you know, if she could, sort of thing.
Were you homesick?
Yeah. Yes, I suppose I was, really. And my parents used to come down at the weekend, and they'd either stay at one of the three places where either my sisters were or myself, you know, and then they'd go back on the Sunday afternoon and he'd go back to his job and mum back to the house. I suppose we spent about 9 months to a year there.
Between 39 and 40,
yes.
And how about school? I mean, how did you fit in with the local kids, local school?
No problems, actually. No problems. I think the reason being, I was brought up in London. It was a bit of a tough area. And we went to a sort of very much a country place. And I think perhaps the children were more gentle. And I had no problems at all. So, you know, that was fine. Anyway, I think...
How did you take to the countryside, I mean?
No, I quite liked it, actually, yeah. And then they had no bombs in London, so my parents decided then to bring us all back. Oh, incidentally, I stayed with the Salvation Army family up until about 6 weeks before we actually left Manningtree, and then... Because I complained to my parents, I was moved to another lady whose husband was the local postman, and she was a gem. She really was kind, yeah. She was an awful lady, actually, and when Mum and Dad finally pulled us out, I was a little bit disappointed in a way, because I was enjoying life so much. anyway, we went back to London, and... After a short time, the bombs did start.
So you go back in the summer of 1940, from the sound of it.
The bombs
started
September-ish. Yeah. And
now, how did the air raids affect you? Did you? I mean, what was your perception as a very young child of eight then of the air raids and the air raid shelters and all the rest of it?
Well, we had an Anderson shelter.
What is that like?
We didn't use it until the bombs started to, the raid started to come. And then my parents fixed up in one end a bed that would take my sisters and myself, sort of so that we could sleep. And they sort of roughed it towards the front of the shelter, you know. My perception of that was, I don't really remember being particularly scared.
Now, what were the raids like? Stratford was hit quite hard, wasn't it?
Stratford was hit quite hard, especially the dock areas. I remember the first Saturday afternoon when we really did get a sort of a hard bombing, and a Spitfire got shot down. And the pilot obviously bailed out, and there was a parachute, and I broke my neck to get out of the shelter to see this parachute. My father wouldn't let me, and I resented that, you know. And then at night, the docks were burning, and it was just a... I remember the... Yeah, next thing I remember, well, we were off school, and we must have been off school for nearly a year. And I'm not very sure about that. I'm a bit vague about that length of time. But we were off school. And it meant each day after the bombs, we'd get out. And as kids, we used to go out picking up shrapnel and stuff like that. You know, we'd see who had the biggest collection.
Was there much bomb damage for you to go around and look at? Did you actually do that?
No, because we weren't really old enough to leave the street, if you know what I mean. But
so there was nothing in your street?
At that stage, no. And the bombing got worse. And I think then my parents decided that we should be evacuated again. And this time, my mother came with us, and we were evacuated to Norfolk, to a place called Briston.
Briston?
Yeah.
Where's that near?
Melton Constable, not far from Holt. And I lived with Mum and a family. And my sisters went to live just along the road with an old lady.
Now, would this be sort of 1940, back into 40, or would this be into 41? It sounds like 41.
It'd be 41, I would think.
Now, yeah. What was this evacuation like? What was it like, the place where you were?
Very, very countrified. The local school was on the village green. Had a few problems going there because I was that bit older, and met some sort of tougher kids, if you like, you know, and that. But nevertheless, we settled in. Obviously, our language being Cockney was sort of laughed at and stuff like that. But apart from that, there was no problem. Things then seemed to get worse in London. And my father was visiting, which was about a 5 or 6 hour train journey weekly. And after a while, we got a little cottage. The village sort of got together and got us an old cottage, furnished it, and my mum and the two sisters lived in the cottage. Dad was still visiting, and after a while he decided that he ought to move out of London. So he took a pub, actually, in Briston, the Briston Horseshoes. And in the meantime, we had then lost the roof off our house in Albert Square, and moved down to Norfolk, to the pub, and had most of the war, rest of the war years, and a little bit after the war, in the pub. And he got a local job, or job locally, working on the state, I think in a sawmill, actually, to supplement, you know, the pub income. And we moved out of the pub when I was about 17.
So that'd be 1949, after the war had finished.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Now, how about your education? How was that going? How did you settle in after your initial kerfuffle at Bristol?
Well, when we got to Bristol, we were sort of put in with the other children, the local children. But after a while, we had two school teachers, both ladies, come down from Norfolk, come down from London, and they then set up a class in the school hall, and they took us, all the London children, together, sort of all ages, you know. Miss Vincent and Miss Gough, their names were, and that was the names. And we finished like that until we went up to the senior school, which was at Melton Constable. And then that would be at the age of 11. Left school at 14 and started work in a garage.
Now, what sort of qualifications did you finish up with?
None.
Had you had any particular favourite subjects or things, you know, things you liked?
Yes, yeah, steelwork, working with my hands, English. But I was very sort of slow on maths, you know.
Well, were you... do you feel your education was disrupted? I'm just wondering whether you think that
it definitely was disrupted. I think maybe had I had regular schooling in one area or one school or two schools, I would have probably done better than I did. But in all fairness, I can't sort of say that, you know, that would have been the case. But I think perhaps so, because I seem to learn more when I've left school than when I was at school, you know.
Now, what about before we come to your job, outside of school, did you have any big hobbies, either things like the Boy Scouts or sport or something?
Football, cricket, you know, the usual stuff.
And any good? Did you play for teams? Or
yes, I played. Well, yeah, I played for the school. After I left school, I sort of played for the village team or the village minors, and then. And then the village team, you know, sort of when growing up, sort of thing. Other interests, well, country interests, I suppose. Birds nesting, that sort of thing, you know. Wildlife, took to it very, very quickly.
Were you in the Scouts?
No. The only thing I did join was the Army Cadets. But I was sort of 16 then, you know. So
that would be just after the end of the war.
Yes.
Perhaps come back to that. Now, what about the end of the war? I mean, I mean, did they have any of these parties, or how did you? Because you're getting on then, but you'd be 13 or
yeah, 14. 14. No, we didn't. Everyone sort of celebrated in the village, but we didn't have any street parties or anything like that. Not that I can remember. No, we. It was fairly well accepted. You've got to consider that down there in the country, apart from food rationing and I suppose the young men going into the forces and seeing action, we were pretty untouched regarding the war in a way. You know, we sort of we weren't bombed or anything like that. You know.
Now, I forgot to ask about food rationing. How much did that affect you?
I don't really think it affected us very much because I think we used to have all our parents' sugar ration and sweet ration and things like that, you know. So I think we accepted what there was. And in the country, meat wasn't short because you could, you know, there were pheasants and rabbits and all the local sort of stuff and people killed a pig and, you know, there was stuff like this. So we didn't go hungry.
Clothing rationing, was that
in? Clothing rationing, yes. Yeah, so we were on sort of clothing coupons. But then you could, if you could afford it, you could buy coupons from people that didn't use them. So, you know, we were okay.
Now, so what happened when the war, sorry, after the war? You left school, you seem to have you started work before you joined the Army Cadets.
Oh, yes.
Now, tell me about, what were you to do? Who sorted out your job? Was it the school, your dad, or you?
Well, we were interviewed at school, not very brilliantly, but we were interviewed about what we wanted to do, sort of careers officers, so they called themselves, came in. And I either wanted to be then an electrician or a mechanic. And when I actually left school, I chose to be a mechanic, a motor mechanic.
And was this a proper apprenticeship? Or was
no, it wasn't actually. It should have been, but it wasn't. I stayed there for...
What was it like? I mean, what sort of job did they have you doing?
Well, it was an agricultural garage, and... I did all the things boys do, you know, sweeping up and making tea and all the rest of it when I started. And gradually it extended to stripping engines and, you know, doing a bit more each time and learning. And then towards the end, I was sort of virtually doing a full mechanics job.
So it was an informal training rather
it
than the
was
formal
really,
apprenticeship.
Yes. And we used to go out on farms and repair tractors and stuff like that, you know. So it was a very interesting, a very good background, really.
And you enjoyed it?
I did. Yes, I enjoyed it.
Now, in about 1948, then you joined the Army Cadets.
Yes.
Now, what was that all about?
Well, unfortunately, it was short lived because the chap that ran it. For some reason or other, after about sort of 2 months, it all folded up. But at least I got a uniform, and we used to sort of do a bit of training. And
now, we're always interested. What sort of level of training did you do?
Well, I suppose a little bit of sort of foot drill. We learned about the Enfield 303, the Bren gun. And stuff like that, usually, you know, and all the weaponry that was going at that particular time, you know.
And did you actually get to fire anything?
No, we didn't get that far, you know. Hopefully we would have done, but it, as I say, it folded up and that
and
was that.
How often would you go?
Once a week, in an evening.
And where was it held?
Well, in one of the local pubs. They had a... I suppose you'd call it a club room, like an upstairs hall, which would take about 20 lads, and you know, you could sort of do your drill and your weapon training up there, really.
Did you enjoy? Were you enjoying it?
Yes, I did like
Why
it.
Why were you doing it, though? Do you think was it just something to do, or was it because you?
Well, that's right. There was not much else to do in the village in the winter months. There were no youth clubs or anything like that, so you know, it was somewhere to go, and it was really a bit of excitement, I suppose. You know, the feeling that we got a uniform and learned about rifles and guns, and you know, that sort of thing.
And so you're doing that, well, probably the winter of 48, 49 then?
It's a guess, 16. But yeah, I would think so.
Mm. Now, anything else happened before I presume you were called up, or you didn't volunteer?
No, the garage changed hands. I then left because I didn't get on with the boss. And I took a labouring job because I'd only got a few months to go before going to the army.
So this would be 1950?
Yeah, 50.
So you've done about 4 years.
14. Yeah, just under 4 years. Yeah.
And so what was the labouring like?
Well, I was in a concrete gang on an aerodrome, which is another eye opener.
In what way?
Well, the people you met, you know, Irish navvies and fights at lunchtime, and you know, this sort of thing. But again, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I enjoyed it. And I earned a lot more money too, you know, because the garage didn't pay that well, and suddenly I was earning more money and more money to spend. And at that age, you know, you're 17, you're 18, you're really happy, you know.
Now, what was the next thing then? How did you come to join the forces?
Well, I was called up.
You never thought of volunteering? I mean, you didn't think of joining the army?
Not at that stage, no. No, I didn't.
So what was the call-up procedure?
Well, it just said, you know, you've become 18, report to Norwich at a certain place for a medical on such and such a date.
Would this be August 1950, or was it just a bit after that?
Yeah, that would be just after August.
September.
Yeah, I should think.
Yeah. Did you have the medical at home, or did you get the medical and everything?
No, we had the medical at Norwich. And I suppose, guessing there were perhaps 40 lads turned up for the medical.
And this would be at Britannia Barracks?
No, it was at a private building somewhere in Norwich, but I can't remember.
And how strict a medical was it? I mean...
Well, what I remember, there were cubicles, and you sort of stripped off and started by giving a urine sample, and then you started off going from cubicle to cubicle, and each doctor specialised in certain things. That's briefly what I remember of it. Prior to that, my sister had contacted TB, so I wasn't given... an all clear on my medical until I'd had a chest x-ray. So I was delayed a couple of weeks, if you like, in being called up. Then I had the chest x-ray and it was okay, and I got grade one, so that meant that I was, you know, fit for service, sort of thing.
Did they ask you at all about what you wanted to do? I mean, I know it's very limited, your choice, but you had been a motor mechanic at one point. I mean,
No, they were only interested in whether you were fit or not. I remember they asked if we could swim and how far you could swim, and if you could run and how far you could run, you know, this sort of thing. But apart from that, no, there was no sort of... there was no choice of or question of what you'd like to do in the forces, or even which branch of the forces you joined.
So what happened next after the medical? The medical's in September. When did they actually call you in or call you?
Well, I was called up to join the army in January 1951, and my group number was 5101. I remember that.
And what happened? Where were you to go?
Colchester, to the EADTC, which was East Anglian Group Training Centre. And there were about, I don't know how many regiments then. There was the Essex, the Norfolks, the Suffolks, Beds and Hearts. I think that's on Northamptonshires. And obviously coming from Norfolk, I was given a Norfolk badge and I was in the Norfolks for training.
Now, what, you know, when you arrive as a civilian in January 1951, you sort of turn up. I don't know whether you were wearing your cadet uniform, but...
No.
So, how, you know, what happened when you first got there? How did they absolutely receive you, you know?
Well, I don't remember of it. You're sort of herded together and... excuse me. And given a number... given a platoon number, and then we were split off into our various platoons, which were in actual fact mixed regiments at this stage. We were allotted a barrack room. I think we were then paid 25 shillings, I remember that. And we then drew kit, clothing.
Now, do you remember what you got?
In the way of kit?
Kit and uniform, yeah.
Denims, underwear, shirts, battle dress. I don't know if you've got two battle dress uniforms, but battle dress, boots, socks. General clothing, you know, that you're going to need. This was on the Thursday. On Friday we finished getting our kit.
Now, well, how were they treated? Were they sympathetic? Or were they all shouting and bawling? Or what was the sort of atmosphere?
Well, that depended really on the section sergeant and his NCOs. I mean, generally they were going to shock you, and they did, you know, show a bit and that. But perhaps I was lucky. I got a good sergeant, and the NCOs were fairly sort of calm sort of blokes. So there wasn't a lot of sort of vicious shouting and whatnot at that stage.
Did you have to have your hair cut? Because, you know, there's just...
Yeah, well, that I don't know if we did that on the Friday, but everyone, whether it was short or long, had a haircut, you know.
And how short was it? I mean, how long was it?
Short back and sides, you know, it really was down to the wood, you know, so that you, when you got your hat on, there wasn't much hair to be seen, you know.
Did you mind? I mean, how long was your hair at the time?
Well, I suppose the hair was reasonably long as a teenager, but I mean, it wasn't down my neck or anything, because people didn't have hair like that in those days. No, I think you all went in, you were all going to be done the same, and you accepted it, and, you know, get on with it sort of thing. You hadn't got any option anyway.
Now, were you in any particular camp at Colchester? Did it have a name?
Or yes, Miarni Barracks.
Miarni Barracks?
Miarni Barracks, yeah.
And what were the barrack rooms like? Can you sort of describe what they were like?
Big and cold. Two floors. On the bottom floor there was a... I think on both floors there was a toilets and a sort of wash area, a bath area. What I remember of it, there were stairs, and then there was a room either side of the stairs, upstairs and downstairs, you know, so it was a block of four rooms. And there'd be a platoon in each room.
With a corporal or lance corporal?
Usually a lance corporal slept at one end of the room, in a small room. Then I think there was a full corporal and then a section or a platoon sergeant. That was the sort of the setup in that.
And what about your space? What was the bed like? What was your what lockers and things?
We got a locker, a bed, not particularly wide bed, and we got sheets and blankets and pillows. So it was reasonably civilised, really. Yeah, it was okay.
Crowded?
No, not really.
No, was it heated? I mean, it was January.
Ah, well, it was. Remember, it was January when I joined up, and you had a sort of a coal or coke ration, which never seemed to last a week. So for two nights you were warm, and the rest of the week you were sort of cold.